Welcome back to another episode of Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And we are back with more information regarding the new 40K. Some of you like to call it 9th edition. Sometimes they even say that on their GW stream. So lots of new rules. Also not snoozing on War of the Spider. There's a couple updates that have been dropped on that. And we'll get the sad news out of the way regarding the competitive scene. One of the super majors that we look forward to every year on the calendar announced this week that they will not be running this year. So get your conspiracy hats on, but I definitely think from reading the announcement had more to do with the COVID-19 and the hotel than any other involvement. But yes, Nova 2020. I know what year it is. That's right. Yeah, Nova 2020 has been canceled in terms of a physical event. They still will be having their online auction, which supports several of their charities. And so if you're willing to put into their nonprofit auction and fundraiser, that is still going off. And there are several key products there. A lot of professional painting services have volunteered their time to put together some great armies for you to bid on. That will still be going on. But in terms of any of the events, unfortunately, will not be happening this year in Washington, D.C. So we're going to get into all the updates and then kind of do a quick summary at the end of the show, what this means for you as from a competitive gamer. But first of all, my condolences to Mike Brandt and the whole Nova team. I know they usually start working 3 months before the 2019 Nova to get ready for 2020. They're I'm always making plans ahead of time. This is also a big event in terms of more than just 40K. For some game systems, this is their Las Vegas Open. So they're a big event. So that's sad to see that this not happening for many game systems, not just Games Workshop or 40K. So a bummer. And it's just rough to see this. And hopefully we're going to finally get to the end of this and start seeing some events on a regular basis. But we got to kind of be smart about what's going on at this point and ride out the wave. So, but in good news, let's start off with War of the Spider, right? There's some updates have been released, kind of trickling updates coming over from Games Workshop. So curious to see not only were this reminder, I can't remember, War of the Spider includes Death Guard, which also includes various Imperial factions, including Adeptus Custodes and Sisters of Silence, and of course, the Spider himself, Fabius Bile, and creating a new faction to go with him as well. So, Ray, what do we got?
Well, Monday, we got the rules for the new Fabius Bile model. They started off with his basic stats. Movement 6, Weapon Skill 2, Ballistic Skill 3, Strength 4, Toughness 4, Wounds 5, Attacks 4, Leadership 9, and a 3+ save. We got stats for his weapon, which in here they call the Rod of Torment. It's a melee weapon, Strength +1, AP -1, and damage of D3. Unless it is against a vehicle, in which case it's just damage 1. Then we've got the Chirurgeon, which is that thing on his back that looks like it's got all the pseudo-medical equipment. It is, yeah. It's a melee weapon, strength 4, AP -2, damage 1. When the bearer fights, it can make 3 additional attacks with this weapon. It also has with it a special rule outside of combat that when Fabius Bile loses a wound, roll 1d6 on a 5+, that wound is not lost. In addition, at the start of each of your turns, Fabius Bile regains d3 lost wound.
Wow. So 5 up, feel no pain, and healing d3 wounds. That's pretty crazy.
There's a rule here for when he's got that Surgeon Acolyte with him. If Fabius Bile is accompanied by a Surgeon Acolyte, after rolling the d3 for the Enhanced Warrior's ability, which we'll get to in a second, you can add or subtract 1 to that roll. For example, on a D3 roll of a 3, you could make it a 2 or a 3. The better example here would be if you roll a 2. You can choose to keep it a 2, make it a 1, or make it a 3. Okay. If a Surgeon Acolyte is destroyed, it is ignored for the purposes of morale tests. We kind of assume something like that. So, here is the Enhanced Warrior's ability. You roll that. You get to enhance a unit at the end of the movement phase, and this is the table. On a D3, if you roll a 1, you can add 1 to the strength characteristic of that unit until the end of battle. 2 is to add toughness until the end of battle. And 3 is to add 1 to the attack's characteristic. Now,
so that hasn't changed from the codex. Okay, still cool, though. All right.
Now, is this... I haven't looked at the Chaos Codex in a good while. Is that something that you can stack, or is it just... Once you do one of them on a unit, that's it for that unit.
Once you do it, yeah. So the big change from previous codices to his current one was it does not stack. You can only do it to one unit per battle. But it used to be once per game, and now you can keep doing it. So turn 1, you can enhance one unit. Turn 2, enhance another unit and bounce around. So that's why it's critical that it's at the end of the movement phase. You can get biled. Moving around and get to the other units.
That's pretty good.
Very interesting. Now, going back to that little assistant there. So the +1/-1, that's applied to the D6 before you convert it to a D3, or is it to straight to the D3?
So the exact words?
Yeah, because you touched on, I think I understood that correctly.
No, because you're rolling a D6, but it's considered a D3. There is no conversion. D3 is just a D6, in which case two numbers represent one number. So you don't turn a 5 into a 6 before you turn it in. It's a 3. It's a 2 or it's a 1. You add or subtract from that.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure. This was like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because that was always the problem, was the randomness. And having that little guy there going +/-1 up and down, that's kind of handy. Because there's some other abilities already that was hinted at. So now you're like, oh, so if I have a little more control of what I'm trying to make these guys, all of a sudden, the Children of Bile? Is that the name of the faction?
I didn't see it in this article. It's not in this article. Second, I'll pull it up.
Creations of Bile. Sorry. It's close. So they're not quite children. The Creations of Bile is the name of the faction. So it seems to be kind of an additional legion for Chaos Space Marines.
Yeah. But you know, some people like seeing new options for Chaos. So
options are good.
So outside of that, the only other...
So what else they got there?
Go ahead.
Now say what else they got.
that was it for that article. The only other real specific 40K thing that was mentioned on Monday was, of course, the box set, which was previewed Saturday. But I figure we'll get to that after we finish off what else they talked about over there. Yep. And the next thing that they covered was new Death Guard rules.
Which, are stacking with some of the other stuff we learned about the 9th edition rules are starting to shape up that even though Death Guard are not the poster child for the villain, they're not going away quietly.
No. Chaos is still very much...
What did Death Guard get?
The first thing they talk about is Relic. That's the Demon's Toll. That's... For the Noxious Blightbringer only, models in friendly Death Guard units, excluding cultists and poxwalkers, have a 5+ invuln save while their unit is within 7 inches of a model from your army with this relic. Now, that's not wholly within, but it is within. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. So, because on top of it, got to remember these guys are rocking a 5+ feel no pain behind that. So, very nice. At 7 inches, interesting. Trying to stay fluffy, but much shorter range. And 9 inches, not bad. All right.
Their next thing is a stratagem, which is the Trench Fighters. You use this stratagem when a Plague Marine unit in your army is chosen to fight. Until the end of that phase, when a model in that unit fights, if it is equipped with 1 or more Plague Knives, it can make 1 additional attack with 1 Plague Knife.
I'm pretty sure that's standard issue on Plague Marine, so it's pretty nice. So, which I think are, 16 points now? Something like that, 70 points?
Doesn't matter. We're about to go to...
Curious to see where they are after. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Curious with what happens afterward. Anyway.
They bring up another stratagem after that, which is Overwhelming Generosity. You use the stratagem in your shooting phase. When a Death Guard unit from your army that is not Chaos Cultists or Poxwalkers, is chosen to shoot with until the end of that phase, you add 6 inches to the range of plague weapons. This does not include melee weapons. I think that's obvious, but I guess they felt
bad to point that out. I could see somebody saying, I'm attacking with my death flail and I have a range of 7 inches. But yeah, this is pretty brutal. Because if you've also got Tallyman, he adds, I can't take that back. I can't remember if it's Tallyman, Mortarian, or just generic warlord traits. There's one of them allows you to reroll wounds with plague weapons. So adding 6 inches to this, and then that adds 6 inches to some of those flamers that are on the plague burst crawlers. Ugh, this is just, it's pretty gross for one CP. So there's a lot of stacking that, but you know, by itself, you're like, oh, a bopping 6 inches, but there's a lot of other abilities out there that will stack on top of that, making that stratagem a lot more powerful.
They do go into the next thing they talk about is actually starting to focus more on the plague companies themselves. This is, I mean, it's pretty obvious, but there's 7 plague companies within the Death Guard. So they bring up a stratagem from the Harbingers, which is actually one that involves poxwalkers. We haven't seen that yet.
Interesting.
You use this stratagem before the battle. You select one Harbinger's poxwalker unit from your army, and you do that for 1 command point, or 2 for 3 command points. You can set up the selected units under the ground instead of setting them up on the battlefield. At the end of your movement phase, for each of the units that are underground, you can set up that unit anywhere on the battlefield that is wholly within 9 inches of a battlefield edge and more than 9 inches away from any enemy models. You can only use a stratagem once per battle.
I'm not sure about this one, to be honest with you, because part of me is like, okay, deep striking screens are pretty nasty, you know, kind of lock you into your deployment zone, buys the team, you know, buys the Death Guard army to, you know, a couple turns to move up, which denies you ability to obtain objectives. We've already seen one of the missions, and that's going to be much more dynamic. My biggest issue is with a smaller battlefield, you know, the only 5 feet across now, you still have to be 9 inches. How easy is it to screen out 9 inches from a battlefield? And it's not like you're screening out a 5-man squad of poxwalkers. You're probably going to max it out. So I don't know. I find this, until we see more about the strategic reserves and how those are going to work, I just feel like a lot of these abilities are going to be a lot easier to screen out or more vulnerable to AuSpec scans. So I don't know.
The next thing that's brought up is a warlord trait from the 4th plague company, which are called the Wretched. The warlord trait is the Eater Plague. When an enemy model is destroyed as a result of an attack made with a melee weapon by this warlord regains up to 1 lost wound to a maximum of 3 wounds per phase.
That's brutal. Enemy model. Yeah, that's as opposed to enemy unit that can restore some health pretty quick. Okay.
I think it's odd that they'd say that they say to a maximum of 3 wounds per phase. I'm assuming that's just so that they don't, because you do the fight, you fight in both your fight phase and your opponent's. So you could do, so I understand it's per phase, so you can get 3 on their turn, 3 on your turn. I'm sort of surprised that they don't just say up to 6 per turn, but I guess they'd rather maybe just have that max on a player turn basis as opposed to a whole game turn basis.
Trying to think, Demon Princes don't degrade, so I guess, I don't know. I guess it's, yeah, just trying to slow it down a little bit. So maybe, okay, so I swing on my turn, I get 3 wounds back, and then the next turn, my opponent goes, ooh, that's brutal. Didn't see that coming, so now I spend the command points to strike, to interrupt and swing before he gets any more wounds back. Whereas if it had been the latter, and he scored 6 new wounds, I'm like, oh, geez, game over. I'm going to lose that combat.
Well, the next thing is another stratagem. This is for the 5th Plague Company, which are called the Poxmongers. It is the Bilious or Bilious Blood Rush. Use this stratagem in your shooting phase. Select 1 Poxmonger's Demon Engine unit from your army. Until the end of that phase, that unit can shoot in a turn in which it fell back.
Always handy. Yeah. So, although we'll talk about the new tank rules, how often will be tanks from Death Guard falling back? I don't know, but if that's an option, it's still shoot. So it's going to be handy.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff coming out.
Oh, so. Yeah. Wednesday, they went over the creations of the Bile, which the rules for that particular army. I'm assuming it's basically, for the most part, it's just your basic Space Marines, but instead of giving them like Emperor's Children or anything like that, they're being considered these creation.
Yep, it's just another Legion, no different than the ones they had in the Vigilist books. So, but it's got some interesting abilities.
Yeah. Well, apparently their trait is add one to the movement and strength characteristics of models and units with this Legion trait.
So that's one reason I was saying earlier, if when you do the enhanced warrior, having that plus one, minus one with the little assistant there, you can make a decision whether you want to be plus two to strength, or do you want plus one attack, or do you want to make a little more well-rounded and give them the plus one toughness. All pretty neat, you know, options at this point. So pretty gross. The article goes on to talk about possessed because they're already strength five. So now they're up to strength six. I'm thinking just even, you know, your basic chain fist guy now goes up strength five, then doubling it goes up to strength 10. Pretty nice.
I could see that being good. Yeah. We've got a relic from them. It's called the Helm of All Seeing. When a model with this relic is on the battlefield, you can roll 1d6 for each command point you spend to use a stratagem. On a 5+, that command point is refunded.
Be curious with the new edition how much that will play into things, because you still get one in your command point in your command phase.
Yeah.
But we don't know how much we're spending on command points during army creation for additional detachments yet.
We only know one. So.
Yeah. So battalion costs three. So don't know. I don't know how powerful this will be, but and it's better to have more command points than fewer. So
the next up is a stratagem called Macro Tensile Sinew. Use a stratagem at the start of your movement phase. Select one Creations of Vile Infantry, excluding Chaos Cultists, from your army. Until the end of the turn, this unit can be chosen to charge even if they advance this turn. And when an advance or charge roll is made for this unit, you add one to the result.
Yeah. That little cherry on top just makes this over the top. So
got another.
Very nice. Again, yeah, yes. I was saying they've got the other stratagem, which also looks pretty good.
Oh, yeah. That's Monstrous Visages. It's 1 CP. You use the stratagem at the start of any phase. Select one Creations of Vile Infantry unit, excluding cultists, until the end of the turn, when resolving an attack made by an enemy model within 6 inches of that unit, you subtract one from the hit roll. That can be useful.
Yeah, it's basically lightning reflexes for chaos. So it costs less. It does add the caveat that it's got to be within 6 inches, but we know how effective this is with Eldari. Pretty nasty. So yeah, I've got this big gribbly creature who just plus one movement, plus one strength. You know they've already advanced. You know they're going to charge with a plus one. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to be minus one to hit them on top of that. Oh, great. Or maybe use this as a tarpit. You use the enhanced warriors can make them the plus one toughness, and then you add this on them, so you're hitting them at minus one, and you're not wounding them as often. So while you're slogging now fighting this unit, the other hammer unit is crushing it. So lots of good stuff.
So later that day, they did an article for the new edition of 40K. Do you want to talk about blast weapons?
Let's talk about blast weapons. So we had Jim Vessel on a couple weeks ago, and he was spouting off about his wish list, and it's like they were listening. So there are supposedly several new weapons, something I think they said over 140 weapons that are going to be getting the blast keyword. And in most cases, those weapons are weapons that have a random number of shots. So you look at the target that you're firing at. If it has between 6 and 10 models in the unit, you always get at least 3 shots. So it's assuming you have a D6 shots, so you roll 1 or 2, automatically gets upgraded to a minimum of 3 shots. If that same unit has 11 or more models in it, then you automatically get the maximum number of shots. You do not roll. So I thought that was interesting. So you're probably thinking, wow, how did they get so many different weapons with blast? Grenades apparently are going to be added to the list of have blast weapons. So I'm assuming your frag grenades. They mentioned, and then did not mention it by name. So several grenades are getting the blast weapon rule. So makes it pretty nasty that all of a sudden 174 blast weapons and relics listed on the back of the rule book will be given the new blast weapon. So a couple ones they hinted away. The Barb Strangler from Tyranids. Deathstrike missiles. So that's the big gargantuan Astra Militarum missile. D-cannons from all you Aldari guys. The Squig Launcher. And then finally, the Phlegm Bombardment from the Soul Grinder. So pretty neat terms that they're working there. So, and then last but not least, we'll talk about a little bit later, but you cannot use these as pistols. So for example, so if you're engaged into with a close combat with a model, you cannot use your blast weapons because it would, you know, affect you as well. So that's the only drawback here. So if you're targeting a model within 1 inch or what they call engagement range, which they finally defined as 1 inch, you can't use blast weapons. So, wah, wah, not too bad. During the stream, they did specify, though, that flamers are not blast weapons. So that'll come into play later in the show here. But interesting reaction online. Ray, what do you think of these new blast weapon rules?
I like it. It never really made sense to me why something that's supposed to make a large explosion would end up causing, like, one. Just never made sense. I've got Doomsday arcs. It's kind of a similar thing. The idea is you get this big explosion, but all of a sudden you roll for your random dice on how many attacks you get, and you get one. It's like very underwhelming. But the idea, especially if you're looking at, like, 30 orcs or 20 Necron warriors or something else like that. So the idea of
30 gaunts.
Yeah. The idea that, okay, he's got so many, so I'm at least going to get and guarantee this amount is nice.
So just a couple things. I agree with you. It was always underwhelming. And I kind of felt like that the D6 mechanic, because you could see that what used to be blast weapons get multiple shots. And you're like, oh, if I get 6 shots, it'd be great. But if you get 1 shot, it stinks. And even 2 and 3 isn't enough when you're attacking, unit sizes of 30 and up. So that was kind of like underwhelming. A couple things that have, I think, reaction. So right off the bat, everyone's saying, it's the end of Hordes. And I'm going like, well, hold on a second. Say I'm an Astra Militarum. I'm firing my battle cannon at, the orc mob of 30 coming at me. It's 6 hits, automatic, which is a positive, but I'm still hitting on 4s, wounding on 2s. So 6 shots. 3 hits, 2 wounds. Even if I somehow buff it up to, like a tanky, so 6 shots, 4 hits, 2 or 3 wounds, I'm still not culling the herd as quickly. And you still need to throw a lot of shooting into a large bunch. Now, I do agree that, like, the 6 and 7 man squads are going to probably go away. So, jokingly, I saw a couple things, like, on the Harlequin page that all those 6-man Skyweaver jetbike units had just been downgraded to 5-man units just to avoid this role. Yeah, you're going to see that. But, I don't know. The whole idea that Hordes is dead, not buying it, at least not yet until more information comes out. But I will say, though, if you're going to go Hordes, go big or go home. But blast weapons will help, but it certainly doesn't make Hordes extinct. So anyway, also have to say that I was wrong. The whole thing with the Harlequin rules there, that if it has, you get bonus number of hits based off of what you're shooting at, but they could change that weapon profile. But oh well, it was a good stab.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
All right, other nifty rules that came out.
They get the stuff for the custodies for more of the spider. We've got a few stratagems. First one is Fraternity of Heroes. You use a stratagem at the end of your opponent's charge phase. Select one Adeptus Custodes unit from your army more than 1 inch away from any enemy model. That unit can immediately perform a heroic intervention as if it were a character, but must finish that move within 1 inch of one or more enemy units. So it's basically a way to get your guys into combat if they don't get charged, and you want to be able to attack with
them. Yeah. Since you're low model count, it's kind of nice to get them up there. So I could see use for this. I could see, heroic intervention always sneaks up on people. So be able to do that with your Uber Elite units is pretty cool too.
Yeah. The next stratagem is Superior Fire Patterns. Use a stratagem in your shooting phase when an Adeptus Custodes infantry unit from your army that did not advance in your previous movement phase is chosen to shoot with. Until the end of that phase, models in that unit make double the number of attacks with rapid fire and pistol weapons.
Yeah, this sounds... It's one of those I had to kind of scratch my head. I was like, okay, what are some of the shooting weapons that Custodes have? And which ones are rapid fire? But just... Okay, I didn't think so. But either way, double the shots is always handy, especially when you've got, like I said, three man squads, five man squads. So not sure this is really all that awesome, but it's better than being ignored. So
yeah, we got a warlord trait here, which is Lock Warden. When resolving an attack made by a character model against this warlord, subtract one from the hit roll. When resolving an attack made by this warlord against an enemy character unit, subtract one from the saving throws, including invuln saves.
So yeah, so anyway, they are adding shield hosts to Custodes, and this is one of the warlord traits. So shield, so these are sort of like sub-factions within the Custodes. There's five of them. So this, yeah, that's subtract one from the hit roll. The whole minus one, even to invul, it gets pretty nasty pretty quick. So I'm not happy about this, considering my army relies on invul saves. But I think it's a pretty neat ability. So pretty cool to see. So the other, another shield host they mentioned is the Solar Watch, and they get a nifty relic.
Are you talking about the Swift Silver Talon?
Yes.
All right. Yeah. So you give this to a model with a Guardian Spear only. It's got two weapon stats. You've got the shooting stat, which is range 24, assault 4, strength 4, AP minus 1, and damage 2. Then it has the melee option, which is, of course, melee. Strength plus 1, AP minus 3, and 3 damage.
So it's interesting in the notes here that they said, they didn't spell it out per se, but they mentioned that the Solar Watch are fast-moving, quick-striking. And then so it then says here, this gives you some incredible tactical options. The enemy thinks they're too far away to charge them. Advance, charge, then wipe that grin off their face. So do Solar Watch to get advance and charge, in which case... This relic is pretty gross because you're still shooting at assault 4 with 2 damage weapons and then getting a decent assault in there. All pretty cool. So we'll have to get some more information on that. And then another shield group they talk about is the Emissaries Imperatus, which I thought was interesting. They're tasked with personally delivering the messages of the Emperor. So they got this interesting strat. So... Ray, what do you got there?
Yeah, we've got the Emperor's Hand. Use this stratagem in any phase when an Emissaries Imperatus unit from your army is chosen to shoot or fight with. Until the end of that phase, when resolving an attack made by a model in that unit, ignore any negative hit rolls, wound rolls, and armor penetration characteristic modifiers, and any benefits to the saving throw as a result of cover for that attack.
Yeah, that's what leaps off the page for me is it's very wordy, but basically it's probably necessary. So interesting that there's negative modifiers to wound rolls. So I'm like, the only one I can think of is the Harlequin Shield of Harm, but maybe there's more stuff coming out. Also, I've never heard of a negative modifier to armor penetration, if you other than cover. So I don't know if there's other abilities out there that say like, oh, I'm AP minus 4. Nope, you're AP minus 3 because you're attacking this unit. I've never heard that before. So that's interesting. But the thing that leaps off the page with this stratagem, it's any unit, not infantry. So if I remember right, Adeptus Custodes still have those nasty tanks. They have those nasty dreadnoughts. Yeah, we don't care about your jink and your aircraft and all that other stuff. We're shooting at full ballistic skill, ignoring cover, full damage. Die.
Yes, I could see this one getting used quite a bit, but
yeah,
we don't know.
You gotta remember too. Well, we do know that Custodes are on the same footing as everyone else now with command points moving forward in 9th edition. So, all right, Lords of the Shield Host, what do we got here?
All right, so kind of need a little bit of explaining. These are things that you'll give your shield captain. when you promote them to a captain commander. They cost command points. We've got one that's called the Indomitable Constitution. You add 2 to the wound characteristics for the model. And then there's another one called the Master of Melee.
That's kind
of... Yeah, actually, it's always nice getting extra wounds on a model. The other one is the Master...
Yeah, that's gross.
Yeah, Master of Melee. While this model is within 1 inch of any enemy units that contain 6 or more models, you increase its attack characteristic by 2.
Also really good. So, especially because your characters are probably the ones doing the heavy lifting with the number of attacks. So, and now we've got the Sisters of Silence. I'm surprised these things are sticking around. I forgot they would put this faction to pasture, but okay.
Well, they did exactly what I was hoping that they would do. Thanks to their Talons of the Emperor rule, the Sisters of Silence can be added to any Adeptus Custodes army. So that's nice. But if you want to, they also have a little thing here for if you want to add them to another Imperial force. So a rule called Null Maidens. Here it is: a Sisters of Silence Vanguard detachment. That is a Vanguard detachment that includes only Sisters of Silence units, is treated as having HQ battlefield role slots of 0 and command benefits of 0. Note that this means there are no compulsory HQ selections for Sister of Silence Vanguard detachments. So it's kind of like when you do assassins. You can just throw them in even though they don't actually meet the criteria, which I think is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they've got the Psychic Abomination rule. This unit cannot be targeted or affected by psychic powers. When a psychic test or a deny the witch test is taken for an enemy model, subtract 1 from the total for each unit from your army with this ability within 18 inches of that model to a maximum of -4.
Bah!
Yeah, pretty nice.
That's pretty nice. I'm trying to remember how many points that, well, won't matter. We'll find out in the new edition. But are they 5 model squads or 10 model squads?
I think they're 5 to 10.
Okay. So in a Vanguard, that so you're only taking 15 of them in the Vanguard, potentially up to 6 units. That's not too bad. Okay, to maximize that -4, just shut down somebody's psychic phase. That could be brutal.
They then give us 2 stratagems for the Sisters of Silence. First one is 1 command point. It's called the Empiric Severance. Once use a stratagem in your opponent's psychic phase. When an enemy psyker manifests a psychic power within 18 inches of a Sisters of Silence infantry unit from your army. After any Deny the Witch attempt, you roll 1d6, and on a 3+, that psychic power is resisted and its effects are negated. So, let's say you don't manage to deny the power on your opponent, you just use this stratagem, roll a dice, and if it's a 3 or more, you still stop it.
I'm also thinking, like, you know, you get, like, magnets, and like, oh, I went off on a 71. No, 3+, sorry.
Yep.
Not going on.
The next one is called Purgation Sweep. This is 1 or 2 CP. You use this stratagem in your shooting phase. You select a Witch Seeker unit from your army that contains 5 or less models for 1 or 6 or more models for 2 CP. Until the end of that phase, when determining the number of attacks made by flamer weapons that models in that unit are equipped with, any result of less than 4 counts as 4. So this is the unit that's got flamers. So here you are, you use this thing, and each model is going to be doing 4 or more. So 5-person squad, that's minimum of 20. If you happen to have 6, I mean, let's be honest, 6 or more. So we're talking from 24 to 6. And since these are automatic hits, it's just that much easier.
Okay, maybe hordes are dead.
More for this, I think, than from Blast.
Yeah, holy cow. All right.
The next thing is for the Assassins, which I forgot were actually in this book, too.
So did I.
So they give us a stratagem. It's called Shadow Assignment. 2 CP. You use the stratagem before the battle begins. If your army includes exactly 1 Officio Assassinorum unit, you remove that unit from your army and then add 1 Officio Assassinorum unit of your choice to your army. The unit that is removed does not count as being destroyed for any rules purposes. Unlike other units that are added to your army, this new unit does not cost any reinforcement points, even in a match play game. I think this is pretty self-explanatory. This is something where you own 1 of each of the assassins, you've got 1 in your list, you get to your game, and you realize you'd be better off with 1 of the other ones. You pay this one, and you get to switch it out with the one that's better for you. This is going to be pretty big. I can see this being used a lot in tournaments.
Yeah, because we already saw in previous tournaments the stratagem where you said, okay, I'm going to set one assassin in reserve, and then I'm going to choose which one it's going to be when it shows up at game time. Yeah. Now you got a 1 in 4 chance that I chose the right assassin. I don't have to spend that command point to do that anymore. So yeah, it makes sense to me. So pretty cool.
The next thing we've got is a 0 CP stratagem, priority threat neutralized. You use this stratagem in any phase when a character model in an enemy unit is destroyed by an assassin model from your army. You gain 1 command point or 2 command points if the character was a warlord. You can only use this stratagem once for each enemy character model destroyed.
I could have swore this was already in their book, but oh well. It's still pretty nasty. So, and then we've already seen that in 9th edition that one of the secondaries is basically headhunters from ITC, where you get bonus points for killing characters. So you get a command point and a victory point for knocking off, or 3 victory points for knocking off a character. Not too shabby. Pretty cool. And you're not, like I said, you're not henpicked or, you know, forced to pick one assassin. You're motivated to bring all 4. Pretty cool.
The next update we got is for Terrain. I think this came out on Thursday.
Yeah. Yep. I've watched this several times, read it like 1,000 times. So I will try to contain myself. This is my jam, my love of the game.
This is exactly what you've been waiting for when it comes to what's going to be changing.
Oh, absolutely. I had to say it was terrible. It's like an episode of The X-Files. I have more questions than answers after the episode. And yeah, it was crazy. Like every day I was just like, especially on Monday when they had the stream, and I was like, we want to talk about the new artwork. I'm like, really? Really? And then the next one was, but then it was the tanks and then the blast weapons. And I'm like, okay. So yeah, nothing I was waiting for more than these terrain rules. So a couple things are here, and let's go over what they are. So terrain falls into 4 categories. Thank you. Either a hill, an obstacle, area terrain, or buildings. Did you say area terrain? Yep. We're rocking it like it's the late 90s. It's 5th edition all over again. So units interact. So they talk about hills. Hills are basically bumps in the road. And they specifically say if you're on top of the hill, you do not get cover. And but you can hide behind it and all that fun stuff like that. Obstacles, they talk about basically if it's between you and the firing unit, infantry, beasts, and swarms get a +1 to your saving throws. It doesn't specifically say invulnerable save, so I have to have to go back and check that if that's the case. But you know, the typical +1 to armor is still alive and well in 9th edition. Now, what's interesting is obstacles. They show a picture of the defense wall, not the fancier one, not the old one from 5th edition. So suddenly those, you know, when you look at the epoch rules, things like random pile of barrels and stuff like that, suddenly those things are the half walls of ruins. Those are all obstacles. So finally they have a purpose on the battlefield. Interesting. So they've been hinting at this for a while, and they gave a couple examples that you can give keywords or traits to your terrain. So the idea is that if you've got some scratch built stuff, whether you've been meticulously building stuff from MDF that you bought from Frontline Gaming, crazy going nuts with your 3D printer, or just decide to go to the pet store and vomit the aquarium materials onto the game table, you can now assign traits to the game, and those become kind of universal keywords that all players understand, as opposed to some of the craziness that was in some of the older editions, or the lack of anything going on in 8th edition. So one of the things they're bringing out is it light cover or heavy cover. This is interesting because it's not what you think it is. Light cover is what we all know and love. Add 1 to your saving throw. And this is where it specifically says invulnerable saves are not affected. So I'm going to go back to that previous statement, say it's strictly just your armor save. Now, heavy cover is something new. When attack is made with melee weapons, wounds a model that's receiving the benefits of cover from this terrain, add 1 to the saving throw made against that attack, unless the model making the attack made a charge move this turn. So when you charge in, you ignore the effects of heavy cover. But after that, if you're in heavy cover, everybody is plus one to your armor save. It says specifically, invuln saves are not affected.
I like that they're trying to invuln saves, because that's just, that can be a little much, especially when you have things like...
It could be a little much, yep. But just keep in mind that if you're assaulting intercessors now in heavy cover, they got a two-up save in close combat.
Unless you charged that turn.
Unless you charged. So, interesting. So, it's definitely... So, if you're assault-minded... Now, granted, we have not seen the assault rules yet. And there does seem to be some hints that there's some changes coming there. But basically, now, from a strategic standpoint, competitive standpoint, you really need to think about, am I charging... You know, when I charge in, do I want to eliminate the unit or just stay out of harm's way from shooting? This added, you know, bonus with heavy cover makes a big change in that decision.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So one thing that they mentioned is that something can be both light cover and heavy cover.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So trying to find some examples. Haven't found any yet, so we'll get there. Some other traits they brought up, scalable, breachable, and unstable. Now, we know from, they gave some examples of existing terrain kits. Scalable probably means that you can go up a level. Like the cargo boxes that you can get, you can go on top of those. They're scalable, as are ruins. Breachable, they mentioned that with ruins. So I'm assuming that means the old infantry can go through walls. Not sure about beasts and swarms, but we'll find out, hopefully in the future. But the one that everyone's talking about is the obscuring trait. So this is the one that is interesting, because when we heard about this, we all assumed it's, oh, you guys are adopting the ITC rule that bottom floor windows block line of sight. Not so fast. If this terrain feature is at least 5 inches in height, where'd they come up with 5 inches? Well, the new kill team ruins are 5 inches tall. That's how they got that from. Then models cannot see through or over this terrain feature. This means that one model is not visible to the other if you cannot draw line of sight, a straight line, 1 millimeter in thickness, between them without passing through or over any part of this terrain feature. The height of the terrain feature is measured from the highest point of that terrain feature. So, long story short, if I'm behind an obscured piece of ruin, unless you can see around the terrain piece, like I've got my large unit and it's sticking out the sides, or you've got another angle, you cannot no longer aim through five windows, a mail slot, target the one model in the back and say, yes, my entire 10-man unit of intercessors can target your entire unit. Okay, pretty cool. Nothing that we haven't been playing with so far. This is where it gets weird. Models that are on or within the terrain feature can be seen and targeted normally. So, although you have all these windows, you can't shoot through the terrain piece, but you can still shoot what's in the terrain piece. That's a big difference. In the past, a lot of our bottom floors were clogged up, so assault units used to hang out there. You can't shoot me because you can't see me. And then the next turn, move through the breachable walls and then assault you. Or even better, if you're too close, I'm just going to assault and charge you from this location. You can't draw a line of sight, therefore you cannot overwatch me. I'm going to assault you with impunity. Very big change. So with those windows, I can still see the units inside and I can still attack, which brings back what Ray mentioned earlier. Some of these things have light and heavy cover, so you're still getting your plus one to cover saves and whatnot. Interesting. This is where it's getting even weirder. Aircraft models. What's an aircraft model? We'll get into that in the later episode. Or later this episode, I should say. And models with a wound characteristic of 18 or more are visible and can be targeted even if this terrain feature is in between it and the firing model. Note, the reverse is not true. So, if you've got a knight behind this ruin, it does not benefit from this nifty rule. I see your large, monstrous mechanical machination behind this ruin. I can still shoot you. However, the knight cannot fire back. They realize that, oh, this terrain piece is in the way and it's blocking. So interesting, you don't have to worry about that diagonal dead zone. Like, you have to be within so many inches of the ruined model. As long as they're in between, you cannot be seen. Where people are getting upset with is, who else has 18 wounds? Oh, yeah, your favorite Primarchs. So Mortarian and Magnus are a little upset that they need to be targeted. You can see Mortarion's wings behind the ruins. Yep, you're still being targeted. He can't swing back. So it's a little interesting. Still trying to dissect what's reality versus what is internet hype and how this will work. One hilarious meme I've seen on TV, the internet is there's a piece of terrain between two knights. Oh, they can't shoot each other. Or, you know, I'm like, no. They can still draw a line of sight between each other. Again, remember, for example, if I'm on the third floor of a building and there's a 5-inch building in between us, there's still a direct line of sight between the knight. And so they're saying, no, rules as written. You can draw, you're drawing line of sight over a 5-inch high ruin. You can't be shot. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Even though you're on the third floor of another building, not sure. But rules as written, they may have a point. So as a TO, I'm trying to figure out how to mitigate that. All in all, it's should be interesting how some more examples of this comes up. And so a little more, this leaves a lot more questions of what's involved. But I mean, so they did give some examples. So ruins, for example, they are area terrain that are scalable, breachable, light cover, defensible and obscuring. What's defensible? Don't know. They haven't mentioned it yet. If it's what it says in the apocalypse rules, hold on to your hats. I've already opened that Pandora's box once on the internet, so I'm not going to do it twice. We'll see what 9th edition has to say. If you have a copy of the APOC rules, brace yourself. The armored containers, those cargo boxes we talked about, they are obstacles. They provide light cover, scalable, and exposed position, which I don't know what that means, but my guess is if you're on top of it, you don't get cover.
Makes sense to me.
Now, they didn't mention... Yeah, it makes sense. So, they did mention on stream that there's also something called dense terrain. And then they also mentioned on stream that you've got things that give you +1 to armor save or things that are -1 to be hit. Well, we talked about light cover. We talked about heavy cover. And they never mentioned dense cover. So, by process of elimination, I'm assuming dense cover means you're -1 to be hit, which would be interesting. So maybe that's a way to bring back forests and jungles to the 41st millennium. Don't know. So there's still a couple other traits still floating around there. Still don't know what unstable means. Interesting. And then last but not least, they show at the end of the terrain section, there's going to be a number of example battlefields presented, each explaining the thought processes behind terrain selection and their positioning. And they gave two pictures right off the bat. So it gives you, for the first time since a White Dwarf in 4th edition, have we seen guidelines on how much terrain should be on the table directly from Games Workshop. And they gave two examples. And unfortunately, it's a glamorous picture as opposed to like a schematic or a line drawing or something like that from above or something like that. But you can kind of figure it out. So that what they recommend, they say this one's a little light, this one's recommended for a match play. And the match play involves 4 ruins, 4 obstacles, and one of those, which I'm not sure what it will qualify as, but those Adeptus Mechanicus like kilns, like those tower things with a little catwalk on top. So interesting. They did talk about it on the stream that basically for every square foot of battlefield, you should have 1 terrain piece. So that roughly equates to 6 to 10 terrain pieces. But then again, what constitutes a terrain piece? A crater versus a ruin? You know, two are very different. So still a lot more questions to ask. The ruins that they show in this picture are all GW kits. There are all the kill team Gothic arches. And they're all 3 sections by 2 sections. So it's roughly measures 7.5 by 5 inches. Which is considerably smaller than what we play with if you're using frontline gaming terrain. Those are 9.5 by 9.5 inches. Those are significantly even smaller than the pro tabletop versions, which are 9 by 12s. And if you're playing at Nova, they use 12 by 12 inch bases. So interesting that they are using smaller bases, but more of them. But it's the first time I said in eons that we've gotten some suggestions on what should be played on the table and some guidelines to move forward to what should be on there. So lots going on, super excited, but still lots of questions to ask. So I'm still, you know, the hot glue gun is not warming up just yet. We're still have a couple couple of rules I want to understand before I start making alterations to the ruins and terrain that we've got to make it compatible for 9th edition.
Does your game day fare leave your fingers orange or your game table pizza stained? There is a better option. You need the Necronom Nom Nom. Yes, that's right. The cosmic horror and great cuisine become allies of convenience with this darkly humorous, gorgeously illustrated, and simple-to-use guide to insanely good food. 50 recipes arm you with breakfast, lunch, and dinner from drinks to dessert and use a unique grimoire of forbidden recipes. Don't tell the Inquisition, but you can tell your friends to find it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Brought to you by the madmen of Red Duke Games, take the pizza shop off speed dial and treat your players to something new and delicious from the Necronom Nom Nom.
But wait, there was more this week. Any more updates, Ray?
Yeah, there's the update to the flyer.
I kind of left this one and kind of went, they didn't tell us anything we didn't already know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
They just decided that it was time to kind of further give a keyword to the certain aircraft that, I don't know. I thought it was weird too. What we're starting to see, I think, is a bit of the keywords coming back in. This case is just being associated with keyword. So you've got the role of aircraft in strategic reserves. We're just kind of seeing a blast from the past there. Whenever an aircraft model arrives from strategic reserves, you can choose to set up anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 9 inches away from any enemy models, facing in any direction, instead of setting it up wholly within 6 inches of a particular battlefield. Aircraft models can never declare a charge in the turn that they arrive, but otherwise follow all the normal rules for models arriving from strategic reserves. What's that?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. So right off the bat, they kind of give away. Strategic reserves apparently implies that you come in 6 inches from a table edge.
Yep.
So it's an advantage that you can come in anywhere on the table. So very interesting that aircraft do not come in from your table edge like they used to in 6th and 7th edition.
They can come in from any.
They're essentially deep striking. Yeah. And in any direction, that's another big difference because you used to be able to kind of block them a little bit. So interesting.
Yeah.
So
the next bit of information we get is, I'll just go through the points. Models can move within an enemy aircraft's engagement. So you can get all the way up close to the base. You have to stay an inch away. Models can move over aircraft and their bases when they make any kind of move. Makes sense. Aircraft can make a normal move or an advance even when within engagement range of enemy models. Okay, that's good. It kind of didn't make sense that you couldn't be within so close of a model even though you're an aircraft. Units can make...
I'd have to fall back from infantry.
Yeah, yeah. Units can make a normal move or an advance if they are only within engagement range of enemy aircraft. And then the final point, when a model performs a heroic intervention, piles in or consolidates, ignore aircraft unless the model moving itself can fly.
I used to hate this rule. Yeah, I'm glad they finally specified that. Yeah, characters were heroically intervening into my flyers just to gain movement. I was like, it's so ridiculous.
So they
gave an extensive list of...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I was just going to say that.
So they gave an extensive list there of what models have the aircraft rule. Two notable omissions, and they addressed that in the stream.
Which one?
And that would be the Helldrake.
Okay.
The Helldrake is not aircraft.
No.
So the Helldrake is still charging things.
A vehicle. It follows more of the rules that you get with like the flying monsters, like the Helldrake with wings. And things like that.
Yeah, and they mentioned that as well. A lot of the Tyranid stuff are flying monsters, so they're different. So that was pretty cool. I have a feeling this appendix at the back of the book is going to be huge.
Well, I don't know if you'll notice, but I believe that there are a few on there that weren't on there, namely the Mechanicus, the Admech flyers that just came out. You know why that is?
No.
I'll tell you why. Because in the new engine war book, they've already been given that keyword. So you got to remember, and something I've seen people argue about. So they've been working on the new rules for a couple of years, longer than they've been working on the Psychic Awakening. So when they started the Psychic Awakening, they already knew it was going to be the lead in to the new edition. So the rules, and especially these later Psychic Awakenings, are going to reflect what we're going to be seeing for the new edition. So here's a great example. We've already got the keyword showing.
All good stuff. One thing we did overlook came up in the flyers. I mean, when you mentioned the ad mech, so a lot of the hate for the ad mech flyer was that, oh, it's all got heavy weapons. It's a waste of time. It's going to be -1 to hit every time it moves, and it has to move. No. It's been a change to the heavy keyword. The -1 to hit only affects infantry.
Yes.
So all you monsters, flyers, vehicles, jet bikes, everybody else with the heavy keyword can move and shoot with heavy weapons without penalty.
And a lot of people...
Now, of course, there's always somebody complaining. a lot of people are happy about that. I'm one of... now I'm like, oh my God, scat bikes are back. Scatter lasers are heavy four. I'm like, oh crap. But now it's interesting that there's always somebody complaining. So basically, the machine spirit benefit goes away. So I guess that was something that was a big thing for Imperial players. So I'm like, yeah, I'm sure they'll change it to something else.
Yeah.
Probably let you advance and shoot with heavy weapons or something like that. But big change there. So yeah, flip through your codex and all those heavy weapons you were choosing not to play with. Some models have definitely got some new life. One in particular I can think of is like the Eldar Hornet. That was like the dream of 6th edition. Completely waste of time in 8th edition because of that reason. You had to use the crystal targeting matrix to make it semi-competitive. Same thing with your Eldar Falcon. All of a sudden, all these tanks are now heavy weapons can move and shoot without penalty. Pretty nice.
That leads us to the big...
So tanks are good, yeah. Oh, yeah, the other thing we also... tanks can shoot models in close combat. So that was... So you might see the return of flamers on your tank, because we talked about the flamers going up against hordes. So if you decide to bubble wrap a tank, so all he has to do is fall back, and he can actually shoot the units that he's in close combat with. He can't use blast weapons. And the weird thing, though, was they talked about declaring your targets, and it's no longer simultaneous. So let's say 30 gaunts are wrapped around my Lieben Russ. I'm going to fire bolt sponsons at the horde that's surrounding my tank, and then I'm going to shoot my battle cannon at the Tyranid warriors downstream. If I kill enough of the swarm so nothing's in contact with me, then I can fire the battle cannon. But if I failed and even leave one gaunt behind, then I'm screwed. I can't shoot the battle cannon. Yeah, okay. So I thought that was an interesting twist in how things work. Yeah. So, but yeah, so that's all the rules we've got so far. But then the big question of what's in the box was answered.
Yeah. Saturday, we got to find out what was in the, what they call it. They called it a launch box. So that leaked image with the Necrons and the new Primaris is the box. We've got a pretty neat looking Primaris captain, another Primaris lieutenant. I think there's a dozen of these things now.
You can make your whole army and nothing. Yeah. Nothing but Primaris lieutenants.
A Primaris chaplain that looks suspiciously like the old character chaplain, the one that had his face messed up. I can't think of his name. From the Ultra. Someone's going to be starting to yell at those at their mobile device saying what the name is. But we get the Judiciar. I've heard people calling it the Judicator, but there's no T. We've got the Blade Guard veterans, which are the sword and shield guys. But bear in mind, they've got those. Looks like they've got those new Volkite pistols or something similar. Some sort of pistol at the very least.
Neo Volkite pistols.
Yeah. No, they're just heavy bolt pistols. Okay. That's what it says under them. But still, they've got pistols still, so you're not giving up your ability to shoot for the sword. They've got their own ancient, which he's walking around with a stick with a skeleton on top. You've got the Eradicators. They're a new Gravis unit holding some type of new version of Melta. And then, of course, there's the Assault Intercessor Squad. Still not sure whether or not these guys are going to get thrown in troops or if this is some other weird version. But then there's the Outriders. Those are the ones on bikes. That's the Astartes
half. All cool stuff.
Yeah. Now, the Necron half. We've got a new Overlord. He's got a new weapon called the Hyperphase Glaive and a Tachyon Arrow, which we haven't seen since, like, 7th edition. So,
hopefully it's more than once per game.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully it's something a little bit more usable. The next up is a very new model called the Royal Warden. Kind of makes me think of like an immortal, but in a sense he's almost like a lieutenant. He's got a relic gauze blaster, so we'll see what rules we get with that. Next up is the Plasmancer. He's a kind of cryptech.
I love this model.
And my favorite part was they mentioned that he is part of what's known as Harbingers of Destruction. And of course, my mind went straight to the old 5th edition Codex, the old Harbingers.
Mm-hmm.
So I am desperately hoping that we start seeing the rest of the Harbingers come back too. We've got Crypto Thralls, which apparently go with him. They look to be a basic close combat kind of a thing. They say they serve...
Yeah, they jokingly call them...
Yeah, they call them the Sword and Shield of the
Plasma. They jokingly call them Murder Buckets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to bet that if they're with...
I'm trying to figure them out.
They'll probably take wounds for him.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Because I'm not sure what they do, because I'm looking at them, like, size-wise, how are they different from flayed ones? And are they just slower wraiths? I was trying to figure them out, so... But you're probably right. They probably soak up wounds for the other guy.
And the next up is my favorite character in the box, even more so than the Harbinger, and that is the Skorpek Lord. He's got that crazy sword, he's got the gun, and he's got some sort of like a lightning or a lightning claw power fist kind of thing going on too.
Flensing claw or something like that, they called it.
Yeah, flensing claw. Also in the box is the Skorpek Destroyers. These are a close combat kind of destroyer. The models show what appear to be three different looking weapons, but I'm curious as to whether or not it's really just slight variations of the same weapon, or just like a two-handed version, one-handed version kind of a thing, like what you get with Incubi.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's you either get a two-handed version, you know, like two small blades, which gives you like plus one attack, and then or like one big blade, which gives you like some sort of strength bonus. That's what I'm guessing.
And then apparently this kind of goes with them. It's called a plasma sight. It interacts with the destroyers in some way. And then we've got that tall spider looking thing.
Oh, yeah.
I'll go ahead.
It's the rumor I've had with the plasma sight. It's somehow it's a cryptic that can keep up with them. So somehow gives them, because apparently those destroyers are canoptic. So this will give them reanimation protocols. That's what the rumors are saying.
Okay. All right. We've got the Canoptic Reanimator, which is a tall spider-looking thing. I think the name pretty much gives it away that it's probably going to help with reanimation protocols somehow.
Yep. And the prevailing rumor is it also has a... it's like a KFF. Projects a 5-up invul to models nearby.
Next, and then, of course, Scarabs, because Necrons have Scarabs. You get the new Necron Warriors coming out. They're going to have Scarabs with them still. Speaking of which, the next thing is...
And I really like the new Scarabs.
Yeah. I like that it's more, and they've got a better look to them.
Yeah, they look more like a swarm as opposed to, like... I mean, the old metal ones were horrible. They were like individual bugs. And then the newer ones were cool, but they're on these weird attachments to the base.
Yeah.
And over time, they broke off, so then you just had these stems sticking off your base. So that's where... Scarab used to be. These new ones look a lot better.
And of course, we've got the new Warriors. Now, you're going to get 20 of them in a box. The picture shown here shows 10, and we've got the 5 and 5 as far as the weapon loadout goes. 5 of the old gun. Granted, it's a new version. No more green tube. And then 5 of the new gun. I don't remember names yet. I'll get there. we've also got
something long.
Oh, go ahead.
I think the new one is something Lasher or something like that. I can't remember. So
we'll get there. I'll start remembering the names once it's out, I'm sure. This also comes with a special version of the core rulebook. No dice, no ruling utensil. You got to provide your own of those.
Which I'm kind of excited about, because overall, when I look at this box, okay, I'm not getting stuck with, you know, yeah, they always say it's a tremendous value. And I'm like, well, it's stuff I don't need. So when you eliminate the fat, you're like, well, like it's still a bargain, but not as big a bargain as I thought it would be. But when you really look at this, especially compared to some of the Psychic Awakenings boxes, every model is new. You're not getting like I'm still lamenting over my Rise of the Phoenix box. Yeah, I got Drazar. Yeah, I got the Incubi and the Howling Banshees. But then I get stuck with like Hellions and a Viper. you know, whatever else was lying around the warehouse that wasn't being sold. So I was kind of like, ugh. Every single model is not previously been available. So, I mean, I'd love to see what the point value soon, because I think you might be able to at least get 1,000 points of each army out of what you got in the box.
I could see that. I mean, even currently, Necron Warriors are 13 points roughly a model. So that's the 20 Warriors is 260 points just right there. So yeah, I think it's going to be 800 to 1,000 easy.
And then you throw in that, you know, that special edition rule book. It's not special like Short Bus special. It's kind of, they give the hint that it's similar to what you'd get if you get the upgraded special edition codices. You know, it's got extra artwork and stuff like that. So that was neat. And then I'm not sure if it says it on the website, but on the stream, they said, this is not a forever product. It's not a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not like,
this is not the permanent starter box.
No, if you don't,
we're seeing, this right. is something more like what we saw with Shadow Spear, where it's out for a little while. Now the way I've come to understand it is they made, as they put it, boatloads. And I said literal boatloads of this. So it's not going to be like some of the ones where it's like, if you're not one of the first five people in your store, you're not going to get it. There is going to be a fairly good amount. And then what we're probably going to see, and this is really what I think, eventually we're going to see a more permanent starter because Dark Imperium is going out of print, is out of print. We'll see, I'm sure we'll see these same models in the permanent one, but we'll see the normal core rule book. So,
yeah, I'm going to differ with you just on one thing in that. Do you need to be the first one in line to get this book? No, but you better not wait like 6 months. I have a feeling that also given everything going on with all the stores trying to ramp up their supply chain and all that stuff, there's a good chance that if you're not getting that first, you know, if you're not getting the box in the first 2-3 weeks, you may not get it. Now, how much does it cost? No idea. They did hint that if you were to buy everything retail, you'd be paying double, that it's pretty much a 50% savings is what they talked about on the stream.
We haven't
begun. That's pretty rare. Most of the box.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was saying most of their box sets are 35% off almost to the penny. So that's pretty cool. So yeah. Yeah. We don't have a date yet.
Yeah. Though we do know because they have admitted that pre-orders are going to be going up in July. I did see that on their Facebook page. Right now, the current estimate is release date of the 25th with a 2-week period for pre-orders. So start saving now, especially if you want to try to buy more than one box. Because regardless of price,
or if you're like our friends,
I think it's safe to say we'll probably be looking between 150 American for it.
Yeah. Or if you're like our friends, I want to split a box, you know, I'll take one half, you take the other. I think you're probably better off buying two boxes and then swapping. So if one player wants the Marine half, you can have my Marine half if I give me your Necron half.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. With some people will each buy a box and then end up with double of each side because they'll swap half, one half for the other person's other half.
So that was all pretty exciting. And they dragged it out. I swear that stream was like an hour and a half. And then they said, hey, like the closing credits are like, okay, we got one more video to show you and good night. And you're like, so I'm thinking like, okay, whatever, another repeat of the, cinematic trailer or maybe a little Silent King teaser. Nope, nope, nope. I was wrong again. And delightfully so.
Yep. So we got to see a bunch of other models that aren't in the box. We got the Invader ATV. This is for the Primaris. I like it. Especially
another Jim Vessel special.
Yeah. I like it, especially if it's if this is what they're going to do instead of a Primaris attack bike, because I don't want to see another bike with sidecars, especially for Primaris, because it just doesn't make sense.
I figured out where my hate for sidecars came from. It's probably from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Because, you know, they're coming up alongside him and he just kicks them and they go off the cliff.
Yeah. The next thing is the Firestrike servo turret. Kind of makes me think of the tarantula turrets from Horus Heresy. But the guy who's shooting it is part of the model. So there's no secondary model standing next to it.
Which is great rules-wise. I hate that dumb rule. Yep. Tech Marine and the Thunderfire cannon. It's so confusing.
Yeah. And there is a choice of weapons here. It can either be a twin accelerator autocannon or twin last talent. Next up, we
have infantry.
Go ahead.
So heavy infantry choice or anti-tank choice. And the other thing interesting I find about this thing, very much a World War II vibe. To me, it looks like a deck gun from a battleship or something like that.
I see it. Next up, we saw the new Locus heavy destroyer. We've already seen one version of this, but we're seeing a new version. Why? Because there's two different kinds of guns that you can have. So either a Gauss Destructor or a Nimic Exterminator.
And this is the one. Yeah, this is the one that looks just like the Jess Goodwin sketches. This thing is amazing.
Yeah. After that, they showed the Canoptic Doomstalker, which is a lot like, it looks a lot like the Reanimator one. But this has got the Doomsday, what they call a Doomsday Blaster on.
Now, in their description of this, I thought it was interesting. They specifically talk about it can move and shoot, or it can stand still and unleash, you know, a greater attack. So the whole, although heavy weapons are move and shoot now, I think that whole thing with the both the Doomsday Arc and this thing, if it stands still, it has a different weapon profile. I think that's not going away.
Yeah, I think this is going to be similar to
the
cannon from the Doomsday Arc. But it's probably going to have different stats.
I was about to say, you think it's the same one? Okay.
No, because it's a Doomsday Cannon as opposed to Doomsday Blast. So I think it'd be a little bit different. And then the last thing, this is in the article itself. I don't remember if this was part of the video, is there is going to be a novel that kind of goes over the events of the launch box that is also going to have an MP3 audiobook. And then there's collector's editions, two in fact, one for the Primaris side and one for the Necron side. And depending on which side you choose for the special edition, there is an additional short story themed around that faction.
Oh, that's cool. I think that. Yep. Two more narrative videos were launched as well, one for Marines, one for Necrons, kind of their opinions of what's going on. Lots of cool animation, not a whole lot of spoilers or anything like that, but still cool to watch. But lots of cool stuff. So lots to ingest there. So, and the best part is we've got five more days of five more previews every day. Anything that you're still waiting on at this point, you're like going, oh my God, I need more information.
The new plastic Satan model that we saw a picture. I want to know two things. One, if you can make the different shards, like the Deceiver, the Nightbringer, and whatever we saw in the picture. And if kind of the same point, but different, if it might be a different shard like the Void Dragon or any of the other ones. Or is it just, are we just going to be starting to move to generic Satan shards without, you know, them being shard of this or shard of that? But I got to know.
Right.
I'm more excited to buy that than I am the Silent
King. I know specifically.
Well, depending
on. Silent King still looks pretty cool, but it's.
Oh, yeah.
I just got this feeling he's going to be a major point sink in your army. For me, I am still hung up on some of the mission rules. That helps me kind of, new rules keep rolling out, because one of the things that I am still baffled with is the pregame stuff is, for example, are we sticking with attacker and defender? Is there still no seize the initiative? Has that been brought back? How does all that work? How is that determined? You know, the attacker and defender, is it still a roll-off? Those are some, you know, key mission things that are noticeably missing from the missions that they teased. You know, nothing was mentioned on that. So I was like, oh, what's going on there? So that's still a big question at this point. And the big changes to assault rules is the other big one too. There's they keep talking about changes to assault. Curious what that is. Very interesting. So I understand there was a medium-sized tournament this weekend. We'll get you more results on that on next week's show. Kind of resume from there. And also additional updates as they come up through the week. It was teased on their audio stream that this week they will not be going over specific rules, but instead going faction by faction, what's going to change in 9th edition.
Cool.
So I think that'll be interesting to hear. Maybe we'll get a couple more hints and read some more tea leaves of how different factions will play. So which will lead into a more discussion about competitive play. So a lot to unpack there, Ray. Anything else to add before we sign off this week?
I don't think so.
All right. Again, as any other breaking news, double check our Facebook page right off the bat if you want to see some of the pictures of all those models we talked about from the box set, including some of the sprue shots. They are on our Facebook page. Most of you have already seen them already, seen a tremendous amount of traffic for that post. So check that out. In the meantime, additional updates will be posted there. So my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And this has been the Exterminatus Podcast. Thanks for listening.